Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Wendy Zammit, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Well, hello, Fran, and how are you this evening?
Oh, good.
And, you know, did you catch the clip? Somebody did me a favor and emailed me because I missed it on 60 Minutes. There was a show, the segment was dedicated to several people, I think six people in total. And the scientists don't quite know how to describe their memory. They termed it, they made up a new term called autobiographical memory. And what these six people, each of them can do is basically they can remember every day of their lives. I shouldn't say every day of their lives because it started not at infancy, but started in childhood. But let's say from the age of 7 or 8 years old up to now these people are in their 50s and 40s and 60s. And it was one of the most incredible things I ever saw. They can, you just throw out a date and they can tell you where they were, what they ate, the weather that day, you know, the day of the week, and everything else. So I think one of the points that the scientists were trying to make was that we just don't know how this ability, you know, came about. And one thing that they started to do is they started to take MRIs of all these people, of their brains, and lo and behold, they really weren't expecting to find any abnormalities, but they did. And what did they find? They found that in each of the six, their temporal lobe areas, as well as another area in the brain, were enlarged, significantly, you know, enlarged. They mentioned it would be roughly, you know, double the size of what a normal temporal lobe would be. And that was fascinating to me because in a lot of the research, when people investigate things like telepathy and ESP, one theory is that that's an area in the brain that either helps to facilitate that ability or acts as a receiver. Were you able to watch the clip? Or?
Oh, I was wondering if you were going to let me answer that question. You started out with that question, and I was all prepared to answer it, but you just kept going. Yes, I did catch bits and pieces of that 60 Minutes, and I did think it was absolutely fascinating. I know before I went on mental overload with the foundation, I was able to recall a lot of stuff myself, particularly what they were talking about, days of the week, what socks I was wearing on a particular day, really specific stuff that in a normal day you don't pay any attention to. But what I thought was really interesting, this is not simple memory they're talking about. They're talking about they can ask someone April 22nd, 1972, and that person knows what day of the week it was, where they were, what they ate, what they were wearing, who they were with, how the whole day transpired. And they were kind of trying to make an association that it was similar to what we've seen in a savant, particularly if you saw the movie like Rain Man, the character that Dustin Hoffman played. He was able to do mathematical, huge mathematical problems in an instant. He was able to flip through the pages of a telephone book and remember every single person in that telephone book. They were trying to make an association to that, but they said that this was a more sophisticated kind of a memory, where and I think the most important thing that I took away from it is that the scientist who was, I believe, at UCLA Irvine, was saying we have so many people that we have been able to come across that can do this. It certainly merits investigation. And again, I'm sure it's going to go to the wayside, just like everybody else.
I don't know. You know, what struck me was that the explanations that he came up with, his question was whether or not they were born with the temporal lobe enlarged, and that is why they have this ability. Or the other possibility was that since they practiced this memory and they had the ability over the years, the temporal lobe grew. He forgot to mention one important possibility, one that we certainly would like to investigate, is maybe memory is not stored in the brain at all. And possibly the reason their temporal lobe barriers are so large is that they're in effect giant receivers, and they can extract this information from these fields that are rich with information. You know, or maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe.
Well, I believe that we're somewhere along the way where someone is doing that kind of research with mediums and checking through MRIs what happens to the brain while they're communicating. It would be wonderful, and I know we've talked about this team science for years, that when those two pieces of information are gathered up, that these two scientists start to talk to each other. Because it's the same kind of investigation, they're just looking for different things. And if they kind of lay each other's work on top of each other, they'll be able to see the similarities and know where to go next.
Yeah, I agree. And also, like in this particular case, if some psychical researchers could team up with this particular memory researcher, maybe these, did anybody ask if these six people had any psi ability? You know, for all we know, nobody asked them.
What? My feeling was that they've asked these questions and they know the answers to these questions, but because it was 60 Minutes, it wasn't part of the show.
Oh, it could be on the cutting room floor. That's one thing that will, you know, I was thinking about even writing to them, you know.
Well, once again, we can write to them. And
well, you know, our guest tonight, I'm anxious to get to her, so I think we're going to go to a break. Wendy Zammit, we'll formally introduce her in a bit. I know that her and both she and her husband, Victor, have a following around the world, and they're sort of pioneers in afterlife research. So we're going to go to our quick break. When we come back, we are proud to bring you Wendy Zammit. So stay with us.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Wendy Zammit. Our sponsor is the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
And Wendy Zammit, along with her husband Victor, they've been researching the afterlife for the past 20 years. Their evidence-based research began in a simple attempt to use their academic skills to understand the many after-death contacts reported by multitudes of people, and it gradually blossomed into a comprehensive analysis of many different phenomena. About 5 years ago, Wendy's had the opportunity to witness physical mediumship, and she has now had more than 200 such experiences with physical mediums. The Zammits release an online newsletter every Thursday that is read worldwide and contains the latest information about all evidence that suggests life beyond the physical. And the website is Victor Zammit, V-I-C-T-O-R, Zammit, Z-A-M-M-I-T.com. Welcome, Wendy.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Fran. I just love your show and really love your work, and it's just great to be finally in touch.
I agree, we look up to you, both of you, for all the work that you do in the field, and I mentioned the website, and maybe we could just start off with that. I mean, you have probably the most comprehensive website there is. You know, it's dedicated to the afterlife and afterlife research. And what was the motivating force for you to put together this website?
Well, first of all, we wanted to let people know that there was serious academic research out there that supported the existence of the afterlife. When we started, this was 20 years ago, there was very little available online. New Age books were only starting. There was very little in the university libraries. I can remember going to our own university and looking up afterlife, and I think I found one book. Then we discovered this whole treasure trove of material developed by the British Society for Psychical Research, Arthur Finlay, the Arthur Finlay College. But it was inaccessible. It was too academic for people, and the the books just were difficult to get. So our aim was to actually make that material available. We also wanted to encourage scientists and academics who had seen the evidence to go public, because 20 years ago, there was a lot of, there's pressure today, but 20 years ago, the pressure was like 20 times as great. And we wanted to protect mediums and psychics who were being attacked by skeptics. And we also wanted to neutralize skeptics because of their influence on research funding.
You mentioned, this all began about 20 years ago. You both had professional and still do careers. I mean, Victor, as a practicing attorney, now retired. I mean, you're trained in academic psychology and human rights and debating and master's degree and so forth. What was the motivator that got you involved in the afterlife research in the first place?
Well, I think it all started when Victor started having psychic experiences. He became telepathic and clairaudient. We started having experiences of synchronicity. And we started going along to a lot of spiritual groups trying to find out what was going on. And one of the things that we found, which was a very common thing, was that women dominated in most of these groups. And a lot of women, and us along with them, were having these experiences, and their husbands were saying, very much in their left brain, saying, no, this can't be happening, it's all rubbish, it's just not true, it's all fraud. And of course, we had been fortunate enough to have had access to the literature to know that it wasn't all fraud. And so we wanted to just make this accessible.
That's very interesting, because we know that a great many people turn to answers and afterlife research after suffering a trauma or a loss. In your case, it wasn't a trauma or a loss, but it was a deep personal experience with Victor wanting to know how to explain some of the things that was happening to him. So,
exactly.
I guess the two of you decided jointly to go into this endeavor?
We certainly did. We did everything together.
Do you find that in your work, I know that we live in a world today where religion and spirituality are often confused. And so I was wondering if you encountered or still encounter some resistance to the work that you do from people who to object, based upon their own, religious dogma.
Not really. It's interesting you say that, because we have many senior clergy reading our reports, rabbis, brothers, nuns, Buddhists. I find that when people are spiritually mature, they go beyond the dogmas, and they are ready to almost, it seems to be an evolutionary process, that they realize that all the inner teachings are the same. The problem comes with the fundamentalists, who don't really understand their own religion, and they don't understand that all religions were founded on psychic phenomena, particularly physical mediumship.
Well, I think you're right. And, it makes me laugh sometimes when you talk to the mediums in private and they start telling you about not specific names, but that their clientele includes, as you say, nuns and priests and so forth.
Absolutely. Quite a lot. A lot of them are having their own psychic experiences.
Yeah.
Not to mention all of the mediums who used to be nuns.
Exactly.
There are a good number of those as well. Yeah.
There's quite a lot of them. And one of the interesting things, we often give little talks to groups of people, and I can always remember going to a group of devout Catholics and telling them, playing some of our tapes, and about half of them had direct experiences of the afterlife themselves. They'd seen their mother, or they'd heard voices, or they'd had a near-death experience. And they were perfectly happy to integrate that within their existing faith.
I've always, maintained that one cannot truly know. They may believe in an afterlife, but they can't really come to a knowing that there's an afterlife without having personal experience. I mean, it's one thing to read about research, and it's another thing to have a personal experience. So would you agree that's very important as it relates to a belief in the afterlife?
Absolutely, Bob. And Fran, I'm sure you've had many personal experiences yourselves. And it just changes it. It's like, oh, my God, this is real. It's like it's that aha moment when you actually just sort of say, oh, my goodness. It's kind of like the difference between walking through a room with a blindfold on and then the blindfold is taken off and you actually see.
Do you find today that more people are talking about their personal experiences than possibly in years ago?
Oh, absolutely. And this is where the internet has been absolutely critical. You know, websites like your own, where people and the little forums where people can talk about this. If you go back 20 years ago, people wouldn't talk about these things. They'd have their experiences. And I'm sure you know in the whole near-death experience thing, so many people just would keep quiet about what had happened.
That's true. And the experiences are so deep and so significant and so hard to put into words that it affected people tremendously. They changed their whole lives because of it. But many, as you say, just kept it in the closet, the fear of being labeled as psychotic or worse, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you find that, you study so many different types of evidence. I mean, we're talking about near-death experiences and deathbed visions and mediumship and EVP and of course, the other psi phenomena like telepathy, remote viewing. Have you come to a conclusion as to which of all the phenomena offers the best evidence of an afterlife?
For me, personally, it's materialization mediumship, and I think ITC has got enormous potential. But personally, at the moment, materialization, there's not a doubt.
Okay. Well, you mentioned materialization, and most people, I would say, I think it's a fair statement in the United States, are familiar with mental mediumship. But not a lot of people are familiar with physical mediumship. So maybe you can enlighten our listeners as to what physical mediumship is and how it differs from mental mediumship.
Right. Well, physical mediumship is where spirit scientists take the energies and bodily substance from a medium or a group of mediums, and they use it so that the spirits can actually materialize in the room. They walk around the room, they stamp their feet, they clap their hands, they sit on your lap, they shake hands, they kiss their loved ones, their clothes are materialized, they have a pulse, they seem indistinguishable from normal people. It is so amazing and so fantastic, and very, very few people know about it. It's been very strong in the UK. It's been kept alive in the United Kingdom over many, many years. But because it is so amazing and because skeptics are so virulent in their criticism of it, it's been pretty much kept underground in very closed circles.
And when you... So when you first, let's say your first experience with physical mediumship, did you walk out of there and scratching your head, or did you question, or
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, everybody, the first time that they sit with a physical medium, their minds are going round in circles. Like, intellectually, you know this is true. I mean, the very first time I sat with David Thompson, which was my first experience of physical mediumship, his guide, William, came and stood about 12 inches in front of me. And I could feel him. I could hear his voice. Then he would move his voice round to my right ear. like 3 inches away from my right ear, and then round to my left ear, 3 inches away from my left ear. And I knew that that could not be David. That could not possibly be David Thompson. He was strapped into a chair. He was tied in. He was gagged. And I knew intellectually this could not be a fraud. But your mind just goes round and round and round, and you think, oh, somebody's playing tricks. It must be somebody running around in the room. And, of course, you know, we're only human. Something as strange and as dramatic as this, your mind will certainly doubt until just a process of elimination.
Ectoplasm, what is it?
Well, we know what it's a substance taken from the medium's pancreas. A lot of the old scientists have studied it. It's actually taken out of the medium's blood and protective tissues. It's composed of leukocytes, white colourless blood cells. Now, the archives of the British Society for Psychical Research contain numerous accounts of scientists investigating this stuff. And they know that it comes from the medium's pancreas, and other tissues in the medium's body. It's a very complex process. We're told that there needs to be a team of scientists working on the other side. There's a whole group of people working to make this happen.
Hmm. Well, so the ectoplasm is exuded by the medium from the medium's mouth or other orifices, and as I understand it, spirit is able to form whether limbs or full bodily figures out of this substance. Correct.
That's right. That's correct.
Yeah. Now, I know that most of these seances take place in the dark, which, you know, opens it up to criticism because people right away, the alarm bells go off and they suspect, as you were talking about, you know, the possibility of fraud. But there is a legitimate reason why they're held in the dark, and that has to do with the ectoplasm, right?
That's right. It's like ice melts in the hot sun. Ectoplasm melts in light.
And I know in some of these, and I know that, as you mentioned, some very credible scientists, both in yesteryear and among today's scientists, have partaken in some of these seances and witnessed these and were given access, as you mentioned, you know, tying up the medium, gagging the medium, and came mm-hmm. away, you know, convinced. But has anybody actually captured any of this ectoplasm and examined it? I mean,
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
Yes, they have. Richet had a Nobel, won a Nobel Prize in chemistry. And he was given permission to examine the ectoplasm closely. I think when they were able to take samples, it just turned into like water after the seance. Mm.
So when usually these take place, if you just take us through the process, you're in a group of how many, about 10 to 15 people?
Well, if it's a small private city, if it's a home circle, there might be 5 or 6 people that we know closely. And what I want you to understand is that we know the medium really closely. It's like a very close friend. You know the person before the seance, during the seance, and after the sitting. And when people are developing physical mediumship, they have to sit together as a close, harmonious group and be almost in telepathic contact with each other. Over a period, they would sit together every week for about 7 years. That seems to be kind of the average. Sometimes it's longer. And it takes a lot of closeness and dedication and trust within a home circle to develop this. Mm. One of the I don't know, you might have heard of some of the direct voice mediums who developed this. One of them, it took him 7 years before sitting once a week for an hour and a half in the dark to develop this gift. One of the leading physical mediums today, it took him 14 years to develop it. So in that time, you do develop a lot of trust with the other people in the circle. And so you know that nobody's running around faking mediumship. This is what the skeptics say. You know, someone's running around holding it, waving a chair. You know that's absolutely impossible.
Do you think that spirit somehow harnesses the combined energy of the sitters?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're told over and over again, this is why there has to be perfect harmony in the group. If one person's having a hard day or one person's mind is elsewhere, that will affect the quality of the ectoplasm.
Hmm.
It is physical, but it's also mental and spiritual.
Getting back to the ectoplasm itself, there are circumstances where certain type of red light is introduced.
That's right.
Yeah, certain things.
Under some circumstances, the red light is allowed in. And in some circles, they're able to produce spirit lights. This is what happened in the skull experiments in the 1990s. And you'd see just lights appearing. We're actually getting that in some circles today. Spirit lights are coming, and this is sort of the holy grail of physical mediumship, is to get back to having spirit lights so that we can actually see what's happening and be able to introduce video into the room.
Mm. I mentioned getting back to some of the sitters, you know, acting harmoniously in a group. I've heard reports here and there from people who had the opportunity to sit with a physical medium, and one person in particular was somewhat turned off by the what he interpreted to be the frivolity, you know, that was taking place. In other words, he questioned whether everybody was taking it seriously. But actually, what I suspect is happening is that it's not frivolity per se for the sake of having a good time. It's to raise the vibrational level.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You've got it, Bob. If people were always told that we should create the energy of a group of friends having a good time, you know, a group of friends sort of sitting, having a happy conversation. It's like, think of the atmosphere around at Christmas time, where people are happy, people are sort of joking with each other, and that's the kind of atmosphere that they need for the phenomena to take place.
Mm. And, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, this does take quite a bit of dedication. I mean, in one case, you're talking about 7 years for a direct voice medium to begin to show that evidence. So, I mean, this takes a tremendous amount of perseverance.
Oh, you've got no idea, Bob. I mean, not only that, but you have to understand that the medium has to look after themselves physically. This is taking a huge toll on the body. It's kind of like your life essence is taken out of your body and then put back. Sometimes the mediums feel sick afterwards. Sometimes, and you have to realize the medium is risking their life every time they do this, because if somebody grabs the ectoplasm while it's out of their body, it can recoil very fast into their body and injure them or even kill them. And so our medium, David Thompson, he has to, he goes to karate 3 times a week. And he has to run the other nights to stay in absolute top physical condition to do this. And then you have to realize that you've also got the psychological pressure of everybody calling you a fraud. You've got every ignorant person in the world saying that you're a cheat and a fraud, on top of all of this physical discipline that you have to have and the dedication that you have to have. So it's a huge, huge ask. And that's why there's so few of them.
In many of these seances with physical mediums, I know that certain objects can materialize, you know, apports that they... Mm-hmm. Have you seen that happen?
I have.
Yeah.
What
were some of the types of materializations that you witnessed?
Well, I can remember standing with a group of people in France outside the room we were going into, and we were just talking, and suddenly a coin materialized in midair in the middle of the group and dropped to the floor. That was pretty spectacular. It just sort of appeared, and there's just no way that that could have come from anywhere else. We've seen, I've also seen a, when I was in France with the Yellow Cloud Circle, immediately after the seance, we found on the medium's chair an old 10-shilling note that had been folded up into little tiny squares. And this had a fascinating story behind it, because the medium in that circle is John Sloan, the control in that circle is John Sloan, who was the medium for Arthur Finlay. And he and Arthur Finlay used to have this standing joke. John Sloan would not take any money for his mediumship. He insisted that it was spiritual service. And when he was unemployed, Arthur Finlay would slip this 10-shilling note into his pocket. And then when Arthur Finlay wasn't looking, John Sloan would slip it back into his pocket. And apparently John Sloan told us that he took it from his grandson's drawer in London and was able to move it across to France to apport it into the seance room, which we thought was kind of fun.
Yeah, but, fun and evidential.
Very evidential.
Yeah, we're talking with Wendy Zammit. We are going to go to break, and when we come back, if it's okay with Wendy, we're going to play a clip of so people can actually hear what we're talking about, of a voice coming through in spirit, you know, through a physical medium. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Heal your loss and grief through these spiritual hypnotherapy CDs. Titles include Talking with the Dead, The Inner Healer, Meeting Your Higher Self, and a past life regression and between life exploration. Dr. Holly Holmes Meredith is director of HCH Institute for Hypnotherapy and Psychospiritual Trainings. Go to hypnotherapytraining.com to sample and order her CDs. These CDs will empower you in your healing and transformation.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages.
Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
You are just tuning in. Our guest tonight is Wendy Zammit. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. Before we get back to Wendy Zammit, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items in one of their 800-plus online stores, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a moment when you shop to show us that you care. Bob?
And we're back with Wendy Zammit. And Wendy, when you participating in the seance, spirit comes through very often in a voice. I mean, is this voice the voice of the medium or the voice of spirit, or can you sometimes identify it?
Absolutely. You can always identify the voices. It's definitely not the voice of the medium, something that's completely different. Each spirit that comes through has their own voice. And what's interesting is that those voices don't change even over 20 years. So we've got recordings of William, David's main control, 20 years ago, and his voice is identical to what it is today. Even when William speaks through David in trance, David will go into trance and they will coat his voice, his larynx, with ectoplasm, and William will take over and speak, and his voice is exactly the same as his voice is when he materializes. So it's absolutely fascinating. The voices are all different and distinct, and they don't change over many, many years.
Now, you've had experiences, personal, deep personal experiences, where your father came through in voice through the medium, correct?
Yes, he not only came through in voice, he materialized. He walked across the room, he kissed me, and he wrote his name on a piece of paper. Now, nobody in that seance room knew my maiden name. You wouldn't know my maiden name. You know, I was married 40 years ago. Nobody there knows my maiden name. And yet my father wrote his name on a piece of paper.
Well, that's incredible. I didn't know that part of the story. How could you not believe in an afterlife after that? Well,
exactly.
I know that we are fortunate that you did provide a short clip of your father coming through the medium. And I'd like to, I don't know how it'll play out on the radio, but let's give it a try. And if Seth, our producer, would play that clip, we can all have a listen.
Wendy?
Yes.
Is your daughter Dalton? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much. That's lovely. I'm so pleased.
Now, that, did you recognize that as your father's voice?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
The interesting thing, you hear that funny whooshing sound? That's what we hear when the ectoplasm is taken out of David's body. And that happens before and after the spirit materializes. It's a strange, whooshy sound. And this was at Christmas time, actually. It was Christmas time 3 years ago. And various relatives of people in the circle came through just to wish them Happy Christmas, which was, quite lovely. And my father at that time, my daughter had just got engaged. And that's what he, the day before. And he came through to say, tell Claire I'm so happy for her. So he was sharing that family news.
Hmm. And he, when you say that he wrote your maiden name on a piece of paper, and did you, at the time, did you know that was going on? Did you hear the scratching of on a piece of
no,
paper?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. It was a fascinating time. The night before, David was giving a demonstration of mental mediumship, because physical mediums have to be mental mediums first. And he gave me this incredible demonstration of mental mediumship. And then he told me, he said, your father's coming through the next night. And then when my dad came through, we had a long talk. And one of the things I said, well, it's been a long time. He said, well, what do you mean a long time? I talked to you through that young man last night, meaning the mental mediumship, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And, he was quite indignant. He said, of course I was here last night. I was talking through mental mediumship. And then after we'd talked, I didn't hear anything, but I suddenly felt a piece of paper being pushed into my hand. And that night we'd left some paper and pencils in the room, and several other people had got messages and signatures. So that was pretty amazing, yes.
I know there have been, we've interviewed some scientists on the show who, when talking about the physical phenomena, they refuse to accept the spirit hypothesis. You know, they claim that it's a PK, you know, and that everything that happens is due to the combined effort of the participants, but not having anything to do with spirit. But it's hard to conjure up how you know those in the physical could manifest these personalities and this hidden information.
Absolutely. I mean, I can accept, we know that there can be psychic phenomena that can produce raps and psychokinetic movement, but not to produce a person. I mean, we've had people come with their dog, for goodness sake. We've had dogs barking. We've had animals. We've had people remembering, coming in with their idiosyncrasies and sharing intimate memories. I mean, how can somebody come in? How can psychokinesis produce a man who comes in and says, thank you for putting the ring in my coffin? Nobody else knew about that in their own voice. I mean,
right.
You know, come on, you know, it comes back to Occam's razor. The simplest hypothesis is the spirit hypothesis.
Yeah, you know, and even if you believe that there is, you know, a vast source of information of everything that ever happened and will happen, and, you know, an Akashic Records type of thing, it's one thing to extract information from a pool of it, but another thing to extract synchronistic personalities and quirks and things of that
exactly.
nature. You know, so it's
and I mean, one of the things that persuades me is, for example, David's chief control, William, will come through and he will remember people he spoke to in the seance room 20 years before.
Mm.
And he will, in the dark, just remember this, you've got in the darkness, he'll say, oh, so-and-so, oh, yes, I spoke to you many years ago and I told you this and this. Is your wife still doing this? Now, how can something like, you know, a memory bank produce this? I mean, it's all very well for the skeptics to have these hypotheses, but they've got absolutely no experimental evidence.
Yeah. Do you, and this is obviously we don't have any direct proof, but I always suspected that it's a learned trait once you go to the other dimension, you know, that we call spirit. Not everybody can instantly, you know, communicate with those in the physical. I think it probably takes a lot of help and a lot of work, and maybe that
Huge.
Explains why some people get messages and some people don't, you know.
Absolutely. And you have to remember, too, that when some people come back to the physical through a mental medium, the first thing that happens is that they relive their death. They come back and they go through that pain again. Now, why would you want to? So not everybody wants to come back and not everybody's prepared to go through that, those experiences. It's kind of like putting on a whole heavy diver's suit and coming back into experiencing what you experienced the last time you were here. And not everybody wants to do that even through mental mediumship. Through physical mediumship, we're told it's extremely difficult for them. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle always says it's like putting your head underwater and trying to talk. And they have to remember what their voice used to sound like, because we do know that it's partly ideoplasmic. They have to remember what they looked like and what they sounded like. So imagine that you're trying to project to the medium what you looked like when you were 8 years old. And what your voice sounded like. It's not easy.
No.
And not all of them can do it. Sometimes it's quite interesting, because sometimes when the spirits first come through, their voices are very weak, and the other spirits will blend their voice with them, so that initially a spirit might come through and he sounds like another spirit. But until he gets strength and practice, then his voice will individuate. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and you mentioned David's control, you know, William. Do all physical mediums, you know, have a control? And maybe you could...
Absolutely. They have a whole team.
Yeah.
They have a doorkeeper to keep out unwanted visitors, to sort of control the crowds on the other side. They have somebody who is sort of in charge of the proceedings, who marshals the whole group and looks after the philosophy. They have somebody who's in charge of producing the ectoplasm. Often they'll have a child whose responsibility it is to create lightness and laughter that you mentioned before. It's a whole team effort.
Do you usually record the audio, record the sessions when you go to them?
Always.
Always, okay. Do you sometimes, when returning home and you play back the tape, do you sometimes capture, you know, some EVP or some voices that you didn't hear during the session?
No.
Okay.
No, it's purely physical. I understand that some of the other physical circles are also experimenting with EVP, and they are able to get the voices that they hear through EVP as well. but we don't know.
Yeah. The reason I ask is that we've had quite a number of reports of people who, almost all people who do, you know, record their sessions with the mental mediums, and there's some. I've listened to quite a number of startling recordings. When people play it back, almost on cue, they hear the voice of spirit when they didn't hear it.
That makes a lot of sense in that situation.
Yeah. As I'm sure you're well aware, there are a tremendous number of frauds in the realm of in the profession of mediumship. I don't know. It would be harder to fake, I guess, physical mediumship, but because of the ectoplasm and so forth. But I know that among mental mediums, because of a lot of factors, the popularity in the media and so forth. I mean, we find that there are many, many mediums who either act in a fraudulent capacity or they simply can't do what they claim to do.
And many of them think they actually are sincere, but that what they're actually doing, they're not connecting with spirit. They're picking things up psychically. One of my good friends is Christine Morgan, who is a teacher of mediumship, and she really cracks me up. She just makes me laugh. She says, before anybody tells you that they're channeling the Archangel Michael, ask them if they can channel your granny. Because if somebody is a genuine medium, they're getting evidential mediumship. They're not tapping into archetypes or tapping into psychic phenomena or channeling their own unconscious mind.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
Yeah. I just think that's so funny that, and we do have so many people who quite sincerely think that they're channeling the Archangel Michael or somebody else. And in fact, they're getting information from their own unconscious or from archetypes or from all sorts of who knows where, but they're not actually channeling spirit.
Right. And we are talking with Wendy Zammit. Now, we also wanted to mention, Victor's book, which is available on the website, very nominal fee, which the book is
nominal free. Free. You can download it free of charge.
Right.
That's very nominal.
That's very nominal.
That's very nominal.
And the book
we put this book, we refused to have it published because the publishers wanted us to take us off the website. And we said, no, it's important that people can get this all over the world, particularly in countries perhaps where books are censored and that they might have difficulty. But we do put the book out, and we virtually send it out to people for the cost of postage.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. The book is called A Lawyer Presents the Case for the Afterlife, and it's a book all about the evidence from all the different types of evidence of an afterlife. And the website is victorzammit.com, Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R. Zammit.com. Now, I encourage everybody to go on that website and not only to look at the book, but look at all the wonderful information, and make sure you sign up for the newsletter, because I know that I look forward after, as soon as the each Thursday's show is completed, I go upstairs, and I know that that newsletter is waiting for me. And the newsletter has not only articles and pieces of information, but it has videos it's pretty much all the cutting-edge research that's going on, not only the cutting-edge research, but research from years ago.
And always up to date.
Always up to date. So I would encourage people to do that. I know that we're running out of time, but I also wanted to mention that you're working on a new addition to the website, which is a section dedicated to the evidence that'll be interactive and also have a lot of stuff. Is that's true?
That's right. That's right, Bob.
Okay. So I don't know. It's been too long, and since we finally got to talk to you, and I hope it's not going to be that long for the next visit. We look forward to speaking with you and Victor again. And again, I applaud you for the work that you do and the support that you offer so many people around the world. And We take our hats off to you and would like to wish you a healthy and a happy new year.
Thank you, Bob and Fran. And, of course, that goes two ways. We are really just so delighted with the work that you're doing and just feel that you're making such a fabulous contribution. And we certainly look forward to working closely with you in the future.
Thank you so much, and best regards to Victor.
I will do that.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And with that, I'd like to say my little prayer for the Gulf. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was Masuro Emoto, May 9th, 2010, right after the Gulf tragedy. And now we'd like to say...
And our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.